Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock. And right away, I want to go over to Dr. Willie Walsh, Bishop Emeritus now of Killaloe. Good afternoon, Willie.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You are concerned about what recent events says about us as a society. Would that be fair enough?
Yes, I expressed that view during the week. You know, what happened in London was wrong. It shouldn't have happened. It was a serious error of judgment by many people who, you know, who in positions of leadership and that sort of thing. So it was wrong. But I do worry about the scale of anger expressed, you know, and the demand for heavy punishment. And I suppose I was asking, you know, if a person makes a mistake and apologises, you know, and if we're satisfied that the person won't do that again, you know, surely there can be room for a bit of forgiveness. And that's the worry I was expressing. Because, you know, forgiveness is a very important Christian value, but a very important human value. And I just fear that we're in danger as a society of, you know, forgetting about that important human value. And I think that if a society loses its capacity to forgive those of us who make mistakes, and which of us doesn't make mistakes, you know, I think that a society which forgets that and dismisses that human value of forgiveness is, in fact, I would say, becoming dysfunctional.
And I'm just looking at an account of what you said to your own local radio station down there, Clare FM. You said, "I understand the annoyance, but I don't believe we should be hounding people out of their jobs." Do you think that applies to all? I mean, we're looking at the people who no longer are in their jobs now after Golfgate. First to go was Derek Leary. Sean O'Rourke, our own colleague here, won't be returning to the station as planned. And I suppose the biggest scalp of all was Phil Hogan. Do you think any of those resignations was warranted?
I accept the fact that Phil Hogan did not, if you like, handled his response to it. He handled it, in my view, handled it badly. But Derek Leary came out and apologised straight away. Does that make him less competent, or that he shouldn't be Minister for Agriculture anymore? I mean, 2 weeks ago, Sean O'Rourke was probably one of the most respected broadcasters in the country. Does it mean now that it's inappropriate that he should broadcast again because of that mistake? You know,
but I
think
suppose
the action taken by RT in that situation was, you know, I think
it's you think it went too far.
And I suppose that was overall was.
Can I just put you, sorry to cut across you, but just on those two incidents, Sean O'Rourke, of course, put out a statement, a mutual statement with RTE, and he said that he felt that he had to hold himself to the same standards, to hold himself to account as he had held so many others in his career. So he seemed to be acknowledging that was an important thing for him to do.
And I think it's a very responsible thing for him to do. But I'm not clear whether was it RTE said that he couldn't broadcast again, or was that Sean's own decision? I'm not sure of that. But it's just, I think there's a lot of anger out there at the moment, and I think the anger really, I think, is about this hidden enemy which we can't control, this enemy COVID-19, been. I think there's a lot of anger out there. Some ways that the harshness demanded at the moment because of that Clifton happening is really we're looking for somebody to take our anger out on, and I think we need to be careful in that regard. You know, I think as generally, if I'm angry within myself, I need to be careful, you know, where I'm going to express that anger. You know, and I think we're doing that a bit at the moment. And I think overall, I worry about, you know, as a society, are we, you know, forgetting about the importance of forgiveness? If I do something wrong and apologize and am forgiven, I think I'm much more likely, you know, when I sense that has been that forgiveness, I think I'm much more likely to make sure that I don't make that mistake again.
I see, again, quoting you from your previous interview, that you say there's a vindictiveness about the demands for severe punishment, which is what you say.
But that's my worry about for severe punishment.
Yeah, did you listen to our callers, Willie, this week? Did you listen to the many, many, many callers that called into Lifeline on Friday and on Monday and on Tuesday and on Wednesday, telling us why, telling us, I think, very articulately, why there had to be accountability for this?
There has to be accountability, but in some ways I think in recent years we have confused accountability and resignation. I mean, there are many different grades of accountability, and it doesn't always have to end in resignation.
Well, I think, Willie, a lot of people would say that one of the issues in Irish society and in political life here for many years is that nobody resigned and there was no culture of actually proper accountability.
Yeah, that's a point of view. I don't agree with that point of view. I think resignation should come about if a person is deemed to have the appropriate ability and integrity and so on to fulfil that occupation, that job. But I think that it doesn't always have to result in resignation.
But of course, it wasn't the people who really finally ended things for Phil Hogan. It was the government. It was his own party leader, Leo Varadkar. It was Micheál Martin and Eamon Ryan. And it was them that told Ursula von der Leyen that they no longer had confidence in him as our EU commissioner. I'm looking at Stephen Collins' article here in the Irish Times today, his opinion piece in the Irish Times. The headline is very, very eye-catching. Appeasing the lynch mob has come at a high price. And he's saying,
I read that article by Stephen Collins, and I don't know, I'd have mixed feelings about it. I mean, it's a strong accusation to make that our government, our Taoiseach and Tánaiste and Eamon Ryan, you know, acted just purely out of populist motives. That's a very strong accusation to make against them. But I think that there may be some truth in it. And I can understand.
Do you think there's some truth in that? Do you think that? Because he describes this as a spineless government running scared in the face of an hysterical media.
Yeah, that's a very strong statement. I'm always a bit fearful about absolute statements. You know, and I think we often have erred that way in our church as well. I'd be very sparing with you know, absolutes pronounced with very definite that this is the situation. I think that most situations that you pass in life are much more complex, and that it's always the danger of attributing a single motivation to anybody. I think our actions are so often, the motivation part of them are very complex. But it's just, I mean, I was just expressing a view and maybe looking for a bit of balance in the whole thing. I'm not
Oh, are we after losing? Have we still got you there, Willie? Oh, I think we've lost Willie. We'll hopefully be able to get him back on that line, but I'll go to Nora in the meantime. Nora, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Casey.
Yeah, Nora, you were listening to Bishop
indeed.
Willie Walsh
and I
there.
I think I would agree 100% with everything he said, because there's an anger out there at the minute that is completely and utterly unfounded. Like, there's no patience in people anymore.
Is it right to say unfounded, though, Nora, really? I mean,
everybody's entitled to make a mistake, and I think apologies aren't being accepted anymore. We've all made mistakes in our life. Show me anyone that hasn't made a mistake, and they're usually people who have never achieved anything.
Well, isn't that a man who never made a mistake is a man who never made anything, is the old adage.
That's the old thing. And it's the people that put themselves out there and do their duty and don the green jersey that are being penalised at the minute. And I think what's happened to Phil Hogan, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily be a supporter of the party he represented originally, but I think he was doing a good job. I think he held a very good portfolio. We will not ever get back that trade commission again, I don't think so.
Well, we don't know that yet, I suppose, but yeah, I don't think that seems to be a widely...
On the back of having had a good agricultural portfolio.
Exactly, yeah.
And agriculture is probably the main focus of things in Europe. It's the biggest trade, and he actually pulled off a stunt while he was up in Clifton at the Gulf Gate, where he secured a deal with the American tariffs.
Did he?
Yes, he did.
Was that while he was playing golf?
Yes, and that's public. And it was said then by some of the politicians that he hadn't admitted to have been in Kildare, etc., etc., and that he hadn't mentioned his testing to being positive with COVID.
Or being negative with COVID.
And he'd said that in the early stages. Well, and some of the journalists have come out and accused him of not having disclosed this. He did disclose.
Oh, no, he did. No, that's for sure. He was the fact that he'd had that test and that it was negative was disclosed. But I think what hadn't been kind of pointed out was that he then understood that he was free to go and that he didn't no longer had to restrict his movements. I mean, I think, Nora, to be fair, he did that. His account of where he was and when he was in places did change. And I think looking at the reporting from Brussels today, that was one of the key issues in terms of the breach of trust and why Ursula von der Leyen took the stance she did.
Mm-hmm. I can understand that. But the thing is, he was hounded, really. And he was hounded by callers to Liveline. He was hounded by some elements of the journalism people. That they just, you know, it was a witch hunt. And like, as I say, point out somebody to me who has never made a mistake.
Okay.
And we have sacrificed one of our a good negotiator. We've sacrificed him, and we have shot ourselves in the foot. And we will not get the trade back. That's definite.
Yeah, that's certainly that was the point that Stephen Collins was made and several. And we have had callers into this programme for the last week saying that as well, that we need to be careful we don't cut off our nose to spite our face here. And Nora, will you please stay there? Because I want to go to Lisa Bracken. Lisa, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie, how are you?
Yeah, you were listening to Willie Walsh, Bishop Willie Walsh and Nora there.
Yeah, Katie, I'm really, really fed up at listening to this business of excusing it as he made a mistake and all those in attendance made a mistake. They did not make a mistake. That's a huge insult to the intelligence of the whole country. That's not, you know, buying plain biscuits instead of chocolate biscuits, that's a mistake. That was a blatant disregard for the rules that every one of us have been following since March. And to, you know, the arrogance of the man, I think that had he come out initially, put his hand up with a modicum of sincerity, then, you know, it might have went a different way and the public might have responded in a different way. But the arrogance of the man was horrible.
Nora, he did himself no favours.
Okay, he did himself no favours. And as I say, I wouldn't be necessarily a supporter. But at the end of the day, we've lost one of our probably strongest negotiators. And sadly, negotiators have to be tough people and probably have to be a bit arrogant. Gentle people will not negotiate.
No, no, no. I'm sorry. Arrogance in business is one thing, and in his negotiations in the EU, arrogance to the people who he owes an apology to every person in Ireland that he's put at risk.
Did he not apologise?
I don't know if he apologised, but if he did, it came out later. He certainly didn't apologise initially. He was arrogant, he was rude, and he insulted, as I said, the intelligence of every person. Now, you know...
Okay, but let's get back to forgiveness. Where's the forgiveness? Have we lost capacity? I'll tell you who to ask for forgiveness, Nora.
I'll tell you who to ask, right? I'll ask you, at the start of all of this, when people, I've listened in to Joe and Katie on the daily, basically, speaking about COVID, speaking to many, many members of society, families who are broken beyond words because they've lost loved ones and had no burial, you know, couldn't be with them. You know what
we
I'm
know.
Talking about, Nora. So, I mean, what about those people? He spit into their face.
Well, sadly, COVID is here with us, and it's something that...
And gladly,
all
Phil
our
Hogan
controls.
Isn't.
But nobody
and
can
very
control
gladly,
it.
Phil Hogan isn't. But you're putting economics above life.
But sadly,
you know,
economics
about
are...
His portfolio. I'm sorry, Nora. He may have, you know, a fancy portfolio. He was well, well paid for it. You know, and justifying his actions by saying, oh, he cut a deal. Well, he should have cut a deal at the table where he was paid to sit. Now, he was never, ever intended or allowed to sit at a hotel. I mean, what message does that give?
Well, 80 other people made the same mistake.
I'm not talking about the 80 other people. We're talking about Phil Hogan. And they all should be gone, every single one of them, for spitting in our faces. You know, the mental health ramifications in this country alone... from the restrictions being placed on children, elderly people living in rural areas. It breaks my heart. It really and truly does. I live in Dublin. I'm 49 years of age and I can kind of make my own way and I have family around me. But there are so many people living alone in rural Ireland.
I live in rural Ireland. I understand.
Okay.
I live in rural Ireland. I've scarcely been out of my own home. And I understand it.
And if your mental health, you will know what I'm talking about,
yes,
Nora.
Yes, I do. But I also understand that we have to start by forgiving.
We don't have to forgive.
In the early stages of all this COVID, one of the phrases that was being used was, be kind to ourselves, be kind to others. Where's that gone?
Well, I tell you where it went, Nora. Be kind went out the window when Phil Hogan and all those with him spat in the face of every person in this country, especially those who have lost their loved one and those who are isolated and living alone and not knowing what is ahead of them. Do you know, I know of one person who is disappointed every day that they wake up. They're so lonely and frightened. Why would you be kind to Phil Hogan and the rest of them? Why would they deserve kindness? He's an arrogant man. He gave no sincere apology. He didn't come out and put his hand up. And you are putting economics over life.
But sadly, at the end of the day, economics are still part of what we need to function.
We need accountability. That's what we need. And when people like that 80-odd who went there absolutely rub all of our nose into it, kindness goes out the window. I'm sorry.
Well, that's the sad thing, that kindness is gone. And it's gone from a lot of people. And people are angry. And, you know, we have to stop, take a breath, because COVID is a thing we're going to have to live with. So regardless of whether people behave badly...
I'm not talking about COVID, Nora. I'm not talking about living with COVID whatsoever. I'm talking about him breaking the guidelines and the rest of them. And the arrogance of the man, the absolute arrogance of him was disgusting. It was so disrespectful. If he, as I said, with his hand up and made some form
of... Yeah, could
he?
I was just going to ask you that, Lisa. Was there any circumstances in where you could have said, okay, fair enough, you made a mistake? Was there any way back for any of those people, in your view?
Absolutely. I think, to be honest with you, Katie, had he come out and put his hand up and said out straight that he messed up, I think there would have been a whole different reception. But I think people were so angry that because he was blatantly disregarded everyone, you know. And the excuses were, you know, laughable. He had a test and he taught this and he taught that. There are children going to school with the awareness of what they should do and what not to do. And you're telling me a man of that intellect didn't know about isolating and didn't know what way things were. It's unbelievable.
Okay, will you stay there, Lisa? I want to bring in John Morris into this debate. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. Hello. The point I was trying to make was more, not so much about the rights or wrongs of what went on, it's just the concern I have for the tone of the response that the nation has shown. It sits very, very, very uncertainly with me in terms of what was Christian Ireland or tolerant Ireland. Just leaving aside the wrongs of what went on, we had a witch hunt and a lynch mob mentality that was being fueled.
That's very strong words, John.
And that's
John,
what we were getting everywhere. And that really worries me about what it says about us as a country. Because at the end of the day, if every single person who has shouted from the rooftop since then has been held accountable to the same level, we'd all find that at some stage we've been less than perfect. So when Don was wrong, there's no question about that. It's just that it doesn't give us the entitlement to start shouting populist righteous slogans, because it doesn't sit well on us as a country.
But it doesn't sit well with me, John, to be honest with you now, because, you know, for so many of the people who called into this programme since this story broke, so angry, so upset, really broken people who had expected and were really concerned that this was going to undermine the public health message, and really now wondering, were they pure idiots, basically, for following the rules themselves?
I think at the end of the day... You can't say
all of those people are part of a lynch mob, John, can you?
I'm not saying that, but if we can't be accountable internally ourselves to how we behave, we can't look to government to control absolutely everything that we do. And we all know...
Yeah, you'd hope they wouldn't undermine it, though, all the same.
Well, yes, but for those who only take... that's an excuse to behave in a way that they wouldn't be happy with doing themselves. That really doesn't help either. Look, we all know that since day one, there have been people who have been either bending the rules or flouting the rules, and there's been arrogancy shown. Every day I walk in the streets, I see arrogant behaviour, and I just have to deal with it. I was very annoyed with it at the start, but that's just the way it is. There are different types of people, and some people really trigger others as well, and I think Phil Hogan, he always triggered me, even 20 years ago. So, but this just makes it worse. I just don't think I think we need to be, as the other caller said, kind. I think it's a difficult thing to be, you know, when you're angry, but it's the time when you need to be kind is when you're at your most anger.
Yeah, was that you, Lisa, trying to get in again?
Yeah, Katie, could I just ask John there? John, that bar in town now, Berlin, would you have had the same, you know, same thinking about there, or would you have thought they were very irresponsible because they were in a bar? What was your... ID on that?
Well, I before I answer that question, I think alcohol is COVID's biggest friend, because...
All right. I'm sure they were drinking in the hotel there, John. I'm sure they had plenty of drinks.
Exactly. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? If we were civic-minded, one of the callers to Liveline last week said... I think his quote was, "I bet you there's going to be a furore there tomorrow." This is before the event took place. Why couldn't somebody have complained to the management and said, "Look, there's something being run here tonight. It doesn't look right."
Just stop putting that responsibility on to other people.
I'm not putting the responsibility.
What were there 81 grown-ass people there?
Oh, I'm aware of that. Yeah.
If you saw
a bomb on the road, would you rather let it explode?
We're not talking about a bomb, John. Do you know, you're sensationalising there. Calm down, okay? What I'm saying is 81 grown-ass adults attended a function. They got invitations, you know. Yeah. No one appeared and launched them into it head first.
Yeah.
They'd well aware in advance.
Yeah,
okay?
So you're putting the onus on other people to report it. That was wrong.
Just to go back to, did you feel the same about Berlin? Did you feel anyone should be held accountable there in the bar?
I'm talking about our response to it.
Lisa, just we'll let John tell us his response.
The optics of the Berlin thing looked awful. The Gardaí found that no rules had been broken. We were all disgusted by it. It was all over social media. But but we didn't have this constant fueling attack on teenagers or early adults as a result
now,
of it.
Come on, John. Come on.
No, we didn't have
come
it.
Come on.
No, we didn't.
Hang on a minute.
It lasted
okay,
a day on social
on.
Media and it blew over.
Clubs closing down all over the place. You know it and I know it. There's people, you know, losing jobs and losing the will to live, let's be honest.
Well, I grew up in a pub, so I should know that.
Yeah, so you know. So you know and you're aware of the detrimental effect of all of this, right?
Yeah, but now, I also know that people's behaviour in society as a group, once we have alcohol in it, just look at it. How much of the accident and emergency cases are related to alcohol?
We're talking about 81 grown adults breaking the rules that we're all living by in a very, very tough environment, okay? But what I'm saying to you is, what's the difference to you with the optics of Berlin and Clifton?
There's no difference. One is a bunch of old people doing it, one is a bunch of younger people doing it.
Okay, but you think that because they're old, they should be excused?
No, I didn't excuse anybody. I'm just saying our response to... My point is, in terms of what our response to it and how we show maturity in response, that's what I was concerned about, and that's why I called in to support what Bishop Walsh was saying.
But would you not think that adults and public representatives should be more responsible than, as you said, as teenagers and younger people drinking?
Well, they should be. They should be, yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
But
so
I'm talking
so you
about
think
our response
right
and how we respond to it.
Do you think that it's right?
Okay, Nora. Yeah,
there has been no big issue about the Berlin bar.
No.
I mean, okay, no. People saw it, people were angry.
Exactly.
But there was no big issue about it. Whereas there's a huge issue about what happened
in Clifton. Public representatives, Nora, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but they're not public representatives. No, why should they be held accountable?
And to be fair, Nora, there had been a huge amount of commentary and some of it from our public representatives about young people and house parties and, you know, the irresponsibility of that behaviour. And there had been a big focus, I think, on young people.
Well, the biggest bit of irresponsibility is what's going on in the meat factories. And we have all these immigrant workers that are being brought in. Basically, it's slave labour. There was a piece done on Liveline, and we are well aware of the fact that...
Oh, well, we can't... Now, hang on a second, Nora. We can't call it slave labour. I know there are issues around working practices and that.
The working conditions are pretty grim.
Yeah, but let's just pull back from the kind of language that might land us in the High Court, okay?
When Bishop Walsh came on, he was talking about us and our response, what made him uneasy, and I was just trying to chime in. I think there are a lot of people in the country that are uneasy when the country starts shouting together, because that isn't going to get us anywhere. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it did. He's gone. It did, John, actually. Because if there wasn't public uproar, Phil Hogan would be sitting on his ass still getting paid.
I don't know if that's the case.
Of course we do. You're telling
I
me that if nothing was said and people did not, if people didn't react, Phil Hogan would be still in his position.
If you're thinking that the European Commission or the Taoiseach O'Connor made their comments based on mob rule, I think then...
The Taoiseach and O'Connor did not make the call anyway. They didn't make the call. They made the suggestion. They threw their tuppence worth, but they didn't make the call on him going, and you know that.
I know,
John, that if there was not public uproar...
I think you have an agenda here.
I have no agenda.
Okay.
I'm speaking facts.
But Lisa, no, we got your point there, Lisa. I just want to let John make his point because I'm anxious to get that point of view because I know he's not alone in having that view. Mm-hmm. You're basically, as Bishop Willie Walsh was saying, you're worried that we're allowing our legitimate, justifiable anger boil over into something that's not healthy.
Absolutely,
perfect,
John. That's exactly I couldn't say it any better than that. And I think that's destructive because it feeds into. Look, it's like a mirror to what happens in America. I mean, we criticise it. There's no winners when we start acting like that. We've got to just pull together. I think again, you know.
But where does accountability come into that then, though, John?
The accountability has been in the following of the due process, and we move forward. We're all looking backwards. There is a new forward that we have to deal with now. And by constantly going over and replaying it to make sure that people still keep the anger, it to me isn't helpful. You,
but you see, you
it's
could, couldn't
that
you?
It needs to be dealt with straight away and not fueled and prolonged over periods of time, because then it becomes something else.
But could you not look at this a different way and say, because of the focus that has been on the restrictions and the need to uphold public health rules over the last week, and the fact that people who didn't were found to, you know, paid high prices for that, that ultimately it might be a good thing
for
compliance and for public health, the public health situation.
There's anecdotal evidence to say that this partitioning of functions had been going on as a way around the regulations for quite some time. Now, it hasn't been given a huge amount of evidence, but the word was very clearly that this wasn't the first time that a hotel had put a partition between two rooms.
Yeah, that'll never happen again, John.
What?
That'll never happen again because of the focus on the story.
I've also been to funerals since then where the number of 50 has been exceeded. I've seen it at first hand, and I've seen it. I've been at funerals where everybody has been completely and utterly compliant. Do you think for the moment, for the people who are compliant, realise that a funeral in a different church only 100 yards away, a couple of miles away, allowed 80 people the previous week? What would you say?
But that's exactly what drives. That's exactly what, you know, what drives very, very upset people over the edge, I think. You know, the idea that they have made these sacrifices, and others just barrel on through the rules.
I know, but do you know what the COVID reality is? But those who are making the sacrifices and continue to make the sacrifices is the only reason why we're actually getting anywhere. The people who break the rules will always break the rules, and that's something we have to live with. It doesn't make what we do any better or what we do any worse.
Okay, stay there. Margaret, good afternoon to you.
Hi.
Yeah. Your response to what John was saying there, that you know, the people who break the rules will just go on.
I agree wholeheartedly with John. I think that there's an anger out there that has nothing at all got to do with what happened. I think that what happened over the last few days was disgraceful. Man was hounded out of office. Everything was nitpicked. He'd explain one thing. They dug into it for more. And they kept going and going and going.
Yeah, but the story did change. With the more digging that was done, the story changed significantly over that time.
If I was asked to give an account for what I did over the last 3 or 4 weeks, it would take me longer than a day to sit down and realise where was I. Such a time. Where was I? Such a time.
If you had just come back from a non-green list country, though, you might have been more careful about it, more knowledgeable about where you'd been.
Not so long ago. So how was the one rule for Micheál Martin and his team, and a different rule for?
Well, I actually heard this being discussed by a public health expert explaining that Micheál Martin was a worker. Necessary worker, and that.
And tell me this now, sorry, Katie, yeah. Does the virus know that?
No, Mr. Hogan knew what he was doing.
Essential worker, I've just been given the word that I wouldn't come to me there a minute ago.
Essential worker.
Yes, and that there was arrangements made because he's the Taoiseach of the country, obviously, and has the most essential in a virus.
Sorry.
Yeah, because he's the Taoiseach and he has to oversee the entire public response to this pandemic, and that that was why he was allowed to come in and get tests done and travel on once he was.
We had Phil Hogan who was negotiating an important trade deal with America, who we needed to go up against China. Who are we going to get in Europe to go up against China? We needed somebody with his demeanour, with his approach. He's gone. We drove him out, and we will suffer. If you listen to Elmer Brock yesterday and his interview, you know the way Europe feels about this. He had the experience, he had everything. We hounded him out. And our government hounded him out. Our three leaders hounded him out. They put the nail in the coffin. And all I can say is people who can't forgive him will never be able to forgive themselves for their own wrongdoings.
Yeah.
And
that's it, because...
Can you understand, though? Can you understand, Margaret, why people were so angry in a way that we hadn't seen for a long time in this country?
I can understand. Why wouldn't there be? Because the media kept digging. Twitter, Facebook, everything. Is it the tech companies that are running the government or the government? who's running the country.
But do you not think that that was that anger that was being reported and that you heard on this programme, Margaret? I mean, there was nothing manufactured about that anger.
I saw what was there. I listened to it.
Yeah, but
hang on. You have to get past the anger. And see, at the end of the day, we needed Phil Hogan in Brussels. We had the trade portfolio and we have nobody to take it now. Because there is nobody able for it. Listen, go back and play Elmer Brock's interview.
Okay, sorry, John, you
we
were trying to get
it. In the foot.
John, you were trying to get back in there.
Yeah, I was just trying to briefly say that there are some sound bites put together and played continually during the day on RTE that featured a mix of comments from people who were commentators in the public arena and basically anonymous voices from various programs, including Liveline, formed into a kind of a mini newsreel, and they played it repeatedly during the day, and it was quite inflammatory. You're affecting the whole nation, and that's fine.
I'm not entirely sure what you're talking about because I know that various programs use clips from those programs to promote those programs the next day.
During Ronan Collins at 12:45 when you get your slot for Liveline, and you get the most. Only the most, shall we say, the most heated, either heartfelt, heated, or outrageous comments. They're the ones that actually get put into that, and that's part of selling. Because obviously you're in competition with all the other media outlets. But I'm just wondering, what's that supposed to serve in the end? What's the end game for that anger? You know,
but sorry, John. Are you suggesting that we should not give people a platform to make their views known at a time of a major news story?
I think you did too much digging. You did too much digging.
People should be allowed to speak. Hang on a minute.
Absolutely.
John. Sorry. Hello. John, just to make the point there, you're saying there was some sort of editing job done to make things look different to what they were. But the programme that's going out now is the programme that's happening live.
Yeah.
Liveline is a live programme.
Oh, yeah.
People ring in, we put them on air, they tell us how they feel.
Absolutely.
There is no editing done on that.
We're not doing this programme, not at all. I'm just saying in terms of the sound bites that are used as promos.
Everything swept under the carpet, John? Would you prefer I'm not very politically minded in that, but I have a certain amount of intelligence, so I'll go with that, okay? What I'm reading from what you're saying is that if Liveline shut up, okay, and didn't allow anyone to speak, this wouldn't have happened. Well, tough, John.
You're saying that was sensationalised.
You cannot sensationalise people's feelings. Anyone who rang in, and I listen every single day, okay?
Yeah.
Anyone who rang in to tell how they feel, their opinion, and how Phil Hogan and the rest of them hurt them. Do you know what I mean? And that should never die. It should have been taken into account.
I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, where do you want to take that? Where do you want to take this anger in a constructive way that's going to help us all going forward? Because the
way of life
isn't going away.
We have lost our trade commissioner.
Yeah, no, he lost himself, Margaret, actually.
We have lost our trade commissioner, my dear.
You said anger
and not being able to forgive.
Margaret, you said we put him out. We did not put him out. He put himself out. He put himself out when he decided to ignore
the
rules.
Can I ask you something? Have you ever made a mistake in your life?
Of course I've made a mistake, but I'm not.
And have you been forgiven?
Like that.
How do you know you wouldn't be in this position?
Exactly.
How can you say what you would or you wouldn't do?
He's well paid.
Money
he
has nothing
exactly
got to do with it.
Did wrong. So
money
did,
has
so
nothing
you
got to do with
anything
it.
Anything wrong?
I never said that.
Well, then why are you worried about the economy if nothing is money?
I never said he didn't do anything wrong. Excuse me. Do not twist my words.
So do you think it's wrong
of
that he's gone?
He did
you
wrong.
Do. Yeah. Okay.
He did wrong.
He has
but
to
the
be
punishment
held
didn't fit the crime.
And it wasn't a witch hunt or tyranny or anything else. It was the truth. How
was it
a witch hunt?
It was a witch hunt.
No, it wasn't.
Dig,
it was
dig,
accountability.
Every time the radio went on. Dig, 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 and nobody looked at the bigger picture.
But you know what? more power to that transparency in the country. Because we wouldn't have a carpet with everything swept under it, Margaret, if everything was kept hidden away to suit that agenda. Let's say, yeah, but your notion is, oh, say nothing, leave it there.
No,
he made
I didn't say that.
Okay, you know what? I think we need to take a breather here. We'll take a breather. Please stay with us. Stay with us, and we will return to this after these.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we are continuing our debate about whether the way in which Phil Hogan ended up departing from office and what it says about us as a nation. We still have Margaret, Lisa and John on the line, but I want to bring in Monica into the conversation. Monica, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Good, Monica.
That's good.
Where do you stand on this?
Well, I stand to say this about Bishop Willie Walsh, and I absolutely don't think that Bishop Willie Walsh is in a position to dictate to anybody in this country anymore. I looked at that picture last night, that production by Mannix Flynn, and I saw the way that the boys were abused in Letter Frack and all of that by the Christian Brothers. It was horrific. I'm still reeling after seeing it. It was just unbelievable. And he wants to sit there and tell us that we should not get annoyed and angry with the likes of Phil Hogan and his cohorts down at Galsgate in Galway. He must be joking.
Well, no, we don't want to put all the sins of the Catholic Church on Willie Walsh's shoulders.
No, of course we don't. I know that, but I just feel that an awful lot has gone on in this country for a long, long time, and we have finally found our voice. I think the people have found their voices at last. And you know something, Katie? The church doesn't like it. Not that they don't have much support anymore. They have no priests coming along, and that's well publicised. So why have they no priests coming along? Why are there no nuns in schools anymore? Why are there's no nuns involved or religious involved in the hospitals? There is a reason for that.
But if we move away from who Willie Walsh is and the organisation that he would have maybe been speaking for at one stage, in terms of this debacle and the response to Galsgate and what Willie Walsh was saying there about how he worries about this vindictiveness, as he described it.
Yeah, well, why are we vindictive? Why? A lot of people have to answer that question. Why? We see people in power, the likes of Phil Hogan, who has, let's face it, a very bad track record when he was in position there, when he was a TD. He told people if they didn't pay their water charges, that they would be reduced to a trickle. Who remembers that? I remember it. And the way he spoke to people. He also, plenty of correspondence in the papers and the media about the way he treated travelling families. He didn't want them to move into a certain area. He had a big shout on that. I mean, that's only two examples of that man's past record. He is an arrogant man, and we have plenty of people to talk for us on the trade at the trade table. We have plenty of people. We have Mairead McGuinness. We have Simon Coveney. We have Enda Kenny. And Enda Kenny refused to go to that dinner. He was invited, but he realised that it was a bad idea and that he shouldn't go and support it. And he didn't go. Now, why couldn't the others do the same?
Enda Kenny didn't always get it right. He got rid of Chatham, didn't he?
Enda Kenny went to the golf park, but he knew that the dinner was way off limits. And
absolutely,
that due
and I don't
to the
agree.
Restrictions,
yeah.
that
I agree
it would
with
not
all
be a good
this.
Idea
it
to go.
Limits. I agree
now, the
with
likes
you.
Of you, lady, you should be canonised the saint the way you're speaking.
We all make mistakes.
Yes, and I agree with you there, but you see, Phil Hogan has made an awful lot
dinner.
Of mistakes.
Now,
he has made too many mistakes.
You.
And he's not even... He was sent to Europe. Why was he sent to Europe? Because he was causing so much trouble here.
No, he
people,
was sent to Europe
people absolutely did not like the man. He was arrogant, and he absolutely followed through on all of those faults that he has.
Yeah.
I mean, he thinks he's above the law. Let's face it, he absolutely did.
No,
and
I
he was trying to defend
to
himself right down to the very last. Every time he came on, he was saying he did nothing wrong. How dare he? How dare he treat people of this country like that?
Yeah. Hang on, I thought we were here to talk about the response.
And as for John there, you should be canonised. You're so saintly.
No, I'm not. Can I just have a word in here? I've had a lot of reasons in life to be angry. And it
and
doesn't,
so have I.
In the long term, it doesn't serve you in your own personal journey through life to be hanging on to anger. After going back and replaying everything from last week and the anti-Fit the Local stuff, people knew how arrogant and how unlikable he was. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about Ireland as a society. As we go into the winter, as the nights get shorter, if we're getting a lot of anger, that's going to be more damaging to us as a country than COVID itself. We've got to find a way of being a little more mature and
well, I think I'm very mature. I think I'm a very mature woman. And I know from life experiences that things can happen to people. I realise that. But finally, in 2020, Ireland is beginning to wake up and we are able to speak. And we are able to go out there and we can protest and say, listen, we have had enough of you. We do not want this behaviour anymore. And we are not going to put up with it. And the anger has to be justified in this case. Absolutely. When you think of the sacrifices people are making with funerals and young people and their weddings.
I'm being painted here as if I condoned what Phil Hogan did.
Yes, the same as
I do not condone what he did.
You think he's the only voice in Europe for us.
I will be proven right.
No, you won't be proven right.
Okay.
No. Okay. I think this was
and
meant
I didn't
to happen.
Speak
Thank
you
God
either.
It was meant to happen. And we will have a new commissioner in Europe. Please,
well,
God.
We'll see, because I will tell you something.
Well, I tell you,
okay,
he was
voice, one voice.
With the Chinese.
Listen, obviously you do not know what that man is capable of.
I know well
what Brazilian beef into Europe for little or nothing.
I know
they have
well
absolutely no documentation
of,
or very little.
Okay, can we have one voice,
and
please?
And you're willing to accept that.
Okay, can we have one voice? He's
a tough negotiator.
He's not a tough negotiator anymore.
Yes, he is. Yes,
not at all. There's plenty of top negotiators.
Well, we'll see.
Plenty of them.
Okay.
We have lots of talent in the country besides him. And that's the reason why that man is so arrogant the way he
I
is.
Because
he's people like you.
People
like people you
like
who
me.
Think he's up there with
I
Jesus.
Don't.
I'm sorry you do. I'm
oh,
sorry
no, I
you
do.
Do. I don't know
Excuse
who you are
me.
Representing.
Excuse
but
me.
Believe me, you will see that... In the future, we will have somebody
Jesus,
that is
okay, Monica, I'm going to... We just need one.
I'm
just,
not letting that
yes,
go on that
Margaret.
Note.
Margaret.
I'm not letting that go on that note. I'm not up there with any Jesus. And how dare anybody say that? I know that
well,
what Phil Hogan did was wrong.
You
I know exactly what he did was wrong. But he did ask for forgiveness and he did apologise. And I would hope that if I did wrong, somebody would accept my apology. So don't speak to me like
and,
that.
And can I just add and throw into that mix, you made a reference there a moment ago, Monica, about an issue. There was a story around Phil Hogan's involvement with a traveller family who were looking for
I'm
some accommodation. Can I just
any,
I just want to clarify just no just I just want to clarify because it's important to clarify these things.
Yes, okay.
That Phil Hogan would say, and we know because he responded to this at the time, he was representing some concerns of his constituents regarding antisocial behaviour of people in a particular area, and he would say that he has done a lot for the rights of the travelling community in his constituency over the years, and I want to just leave that there I'm going to just take a break because I think we need to get another one in now. Thank you, stay there.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Father Iggy O'Donovan, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. And my God, I hope I'm coming into calmer water.
I think we've taken a breath there. We've had our break.
Right.
You were listening to the programme. Did you hear Bishop Willie Walsh?
I did, and I've seldom been seen as a spear bearer for the bishops, I think. But I think one of your callers there spoke about Willie dictating. If there was ever one of our bishops in recent decades who didn't dictate, it's Willie.
Indeed, he didn't.
And in fact, he was. I know that. I remember his walk round his diocese when he took over as bishop first. He did a walk round to all the areas of the diocese as part of an atonement for abuse problems. And anyway, to leave it at that. But one of his points was that of forgiveness, and when a person apologizes. And something that crossed my mind as he was speaking was the Good Friday Agreement, which was seen in this country, I think, as the greatest achievement since Michael Collins and the Treaty and maybe De Valera and Second World War neutrality, or one of my major achievements by our leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the agreement, one of the things which caused most hurt for some people and most hope for others was that of forgiveness, and above all, the pardoning
of prisoners,
of people who had been involved, including the hardest killers. Now, at the time, I was based up near the border in Drogheda, and I did meet people who had been very hurt on both sides of the divide, shall we say, loyalists and Republicans. And I met families who were appalled at the idea of pardoning for hardened killers. And some of them are very hardened killers. But we saw it as part of the bigger picture, which Bertie and Tony Blair negotiated, along with others, the late, great John Hume, God rest
him, and
others. But we were so proud of the fact that we could be pardoning, we could forgive, we could let bygones be bygones and so forth. And it struck me that Phil, while he was his own worst enemy, I agree, he should never have been in Galway, at least not at the dinner, whatever about the golf, and his reaction to it. Like, nobody today is mentioning Derek O'Leary except in praise. That's, I noticed that.
His resignation became him, indeed.
It became him. And I'm sure if there's a reshuffle, probably maybe in the near distant future, if there's a reshuffle, and the way things are going, there could well be. He could well be back.
But doesn't that really go to Lisa's point in that if people are contrite, genuinely contrite, and come out immediately and put your hands up, and people accept that you are genuinely sorry for the mistake you made,
that we do have the capacity to forgive,
right?
And I think that's where Phil came a bit unstuck, in that he was talking about, look, the Hotels Federation cleared this, somebody else cleared that.
Indeed.
And I know, coming from the church, and I know you probably have callers in, who am I to talk? I know, hands up on all the past traditions and the wrongs for which we and I were personally responsible. But overall, he possibly would have been forgiven, I think, had he come out. But the drip, and we know what the drip is like. You're denying something, you're holding something up, and then another bit comes, and another bit comes.
Yeah, but you see,
And between it all, it sort of begins to add up and your position becomes untenable.
Can I go on that point, just to ask you about that? Because, you see, that's why people who got fed up with that and got anger, saw their anger rising as the days went on. For them now to be described as a lynch mob, I think, will further add to their upset. I wonder, you've just explained there very precisely why people became particularly angry with Phil Hogan.
Because above all, as a churchman, and what we have been through in the past 30 years, the drip thing and the denials and so forth. Now, Phil didn't really deny, but bits came out. It was one day, there was something, and there was something, and there was something came out the next day. And it added up. But I think, and most people agree, he was doing a very good job in the job that he was in.
Indeed,
now,
yep.
I mightn't go so far as one of your callers there that he was going to shatter China. I mean, let's face it, that doesn't happen. But
that'd be a good day's work, in fairness.
I don't think that guy, what's his name, is quaking in his boots. He's not. At whoever takes over from Phil. But No, I think Willie's point overall, and I think there was probably a bit of a harsh reaction to him there, because I know he's a genuine, open, liberal-minded man. I've never met him. He doesn't know me. I don't know him, except through his public ministry. And I detect a sort of a harshness where I know we belong to the old morality, which, my God, I don't need to go into it. But the new morality in some ways can be as oppressive, in some ways, where you can't open your mouth about anything, but you're anti this or you're anti that. And
well,
rational.
We call it the cancel culture, don't we?
We do. And even last night, and we're facing into this again, I was watching on CNN the Trump triumph last night, and the sheer language. My God, the Vatican, at the best of their old days, wouldn't have come out with it. The sheer, the vehemence, the moralising, the so forth. And I hope we don't go down that road. Yesterday, the great ex-BBC journalist, is a David Dimbleby.
Mm-hmm.
He had a strong go at Boris Johnson, who made a big attack on those who wanted Land of Hope and Glory and Rule Britannia to be modified for the, what do we call that great programme, the musical thing, eluding me for a moment. And he said that Boris was going to the worst of Trumpism.
Is it the Proms?
Who said that, that those who were looking for moderation there were being anti-British, and you know, so there is a sort of a fundamentalism in some ways and a non-forgiveness. And I just hope we don't go down that road, because generally, I think overall, for all our faults, we've been a reasonably good democracy in our own ways. And I do acknowledge, and I did watch the Manix Flynn programme last night. I don't need to say any more. I did watch it.
Indeed.
I hand up my own hand insofar as I'm ever part of anything like that. But hey.
But can I just put you one thing, though? Like when you mentioned Boris and the situation in the UK.
Yeah.
And of course, there was a huge issue there when Dominic Cummings was caught, basically. Driving up to a beauty spot, and when they were supposed to be self-isolating, and you know, him suggesting that he was testing his eyesight and all of that, and it became a big joke in a way, but it did, according to all accounts, have a detrimental effect on the compliance with public health restrictions in the UK. Now, if we had a situation here where there wasn't a massive response, where there wasn't resignations, would we not be in danger of having the same thing? Does there not need to be some kind of accountability?
There does. And I think Dominic Cummings' problem was he had set the bar so high for other people. And I'm admitting myself that in other areas, we in the church, we set the bar in many areas very high for other people. And then when it came to jumping it, we were the least able to do it ourselves. Now, so I appreciated the reaction that was there. And I accept totally the reaction there was to Phil Hogan. That much of it created by himself. Because, as I say, the other people involved, and at least also have come forward, Sean O'Rourke, the hugely respected journalist, in fact, on your own station for so long,
mm-hmm.
and Derek O'Leary and others, that generally people have accepted what they have said. But I think his problem was that he came out so defensively, and excuses and other things. And I don't know the man personally in any sense. We have never met. I've never spoken a word to the man, to my knowledge. And,
but do you think, just in a general sense then, have Irish people become unforgiving?
Certainly we've become angrier, but then I suppose we have, at least in this case, we had something to get angry with. And I'm coming from a situation where I've experienced so much of that anger, and as has the institution to which I belong. So that in some ways I appreciate where it's coming from, because, if you like, we've been through it. And finally, we have come to accept that we deserve this, and perhaps even more. But the great pity in many ways is that a few months ago, and I still do a bit of chaplaincy in a school, and I recall the day we closed down back on the 13th of March, I think it was. We sent the students home, and then my own church where I work closed down, and we all closed down, and everybody accepted it, and everybody's shoulder was to the wheel. And Leo and Dr. Houlihan, and I wish him well personally, I believe his wife is ill.
Mm-hmm.
But all of that But there was a national effort, such as we had in the Second World War, such as we have whenever.
Mm-hmm.
We pushed together. And the pity is, I think, that this present debate, this row about Phil, this row about the golf dinner where Corona 19 met the 19th hole in Galway. But it has broken that, if you like, that national thing. Many people have given up and there is an anger.
But is it the response to it or is it the it? Is it what happened or is it how we have responded to it that has undermined and is starting to see this national thing,
yes.
The green jersey unravel?
What happened is probably largely responsible for the reaction to it. But certainly the reaction, in some ways, probably a bit over the top. Like, I'm a great fan of Liveline and occasionally contribute. But the tone, and I hugely respect everybody who calls, whatever their opinion is. But it's probably a measure of how people feel. And, of course, part of it as well is that, as we know from the church, people no longer take from any authority, be it ecclesiastical or civil, the nonsense of the old days of where people took it from the top down.
Yeah.
The questions are being raised much. But I'm just sorry it happened. I'm sorry for Phil personally and for anybody involved. And I'm sure he has a family and friends as well. And my goodness, this must be awful.
Well, I know nobody takes any pleasure. Well, I hope we don't take any pleasure.
We don't. And there is a little thing about some of the speakers who seem to take some type of pleasure in his misfortune, which would be a great pity. And I think that's what Bishop Willie was saying at the beginning, which was the most reasonable message.
Okay.
And
Father Iggy, I'm going to cut across you because I do need to take a break. I'm being told here. But will you stay there? Because I have somebody who wants to come on and take this further after these.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Father Iggy O'Donovan is still with us, but I want to just bring in Alwyn. Alwyn, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie, how are you?
Yeah, would you be agreeing with Father Iggy there?
Well, what I was going to say was that I wouldn't take pleasure in what happened to Phil Hogan, but I don't feel sorry for him at all. He is a seasoned politician. He knew exactly what he was doing when he came into the country and buzzed in and out of Kildare and Kilkenny and back to Kildare. And on his mobile phone, I mean, I know that you did the programme on that yesterday with people who had been caught on their mobiles and they weren't shown any leniency. And I believe, too, that he has messed this up for himself. If he hadn't done what he had done, if he had given a really wholehearted apology, but he just gave this half-hearted trickle apology, then he had to be told by the three leaders, in inverted commas, to make a more fulsome apology, and then he did it. But I think I sort of think that he kind of has this old idea from the Hawhey era that, you know, we don't have to tell the cabbages everything, all of us little cabbages in the country who vote them in. We don't have to tell them everything and we'll get away with it. He has this massive job in Europe. I truly believe that Ursula von der Leyen would have got rid of him. The numbers in COVID numbers in Belgium are going through the roof. My sister lives there. And I don't think that she, the particular type of woman that she is, I don't think that she could have looked at that and said, OK, Ireland isn't forgiving you, but I will, and you will continue in trade, where I imagine he was doing a great job. But I think that she would have got rid of him anyway. And, I mean, people are raging because it looks like they are doing, he did whatever he wanted, assuming he would get away with it because of the old style of politics. And things have changed. I mean, I didn't see my father for 4 months while this was going on. I can now only see him whenever I can get a slot on the nursing home calendar, even though I work. I commuted 4 hours a day to work during COVID. I went nowhere. I saw nobody. And I think that's why people are so angry. I'm apolitical. I don't vote for any of them. I think the problem with politics in this country as well, this is just an aside, is that it's always very local. You know, I heard that bit about Phil Hogan, or it goes along party lines all the time. Like, I heard that little bit about him doing great work for the Travellers. And he probably did in his community. But the problem with local politicians is that sometimes they do work that the county council should be doing. The county council should be housing Travellers and looking after them and other people in the same situation. Not the likes of Phil Hogan at his level. You know, I mean, that's the problem I have with the whole situation.
But the point that Willie Walsh opened this whole debate up with today
he was
basically just saying he's just concerned that the level of anger that erupted in response to this and the demand for the harshest of sanctions with everyone involved, he's concerned of what that will do to us as a country.
But, you know, COVID has made people really angry. It didn't in the beginning. It was all the kindness, looking after one another, blah, blah, blah. But then we probably might still be in that vein if we saw huge examples from our supposed leaders. You have Sinn Féin, just saying that it was okay for them to go to that funeral in Belfast.
The Bobby Storey funeral.
Yeah, the Bobby Storey funeral. It was okay for them to go to that because they were going to a funeral and he was a great friend. Who cares? You've been doing that these programs all week that people couldn't bury their own parents. I mean, it's just, this is the stuff, and that's why people are getting angry now. And I do understand that there is a cancel culture that you can't open your mouth and people are on top of you. But I think in this instance that Phil Hogan screwed this up for himself. He might have got away with it. I'd love to know who the other 75 people who weren't named, by the way. I'd love to know who all of them were. They should suffer the same then, in inverted commas. I do think that we're angry now, but I think we have a right to be angry because we are going to be in this situation for the next year or so. We can't see people that we want to see. I was supposed to visit a friend in Kildare last week because I'm on annual leave at the moment, and I can't go see her in Kildare because it's in lockdown. I wouldn't dream of it. And, you know, when I was commuting, the guards used to get on the bus. They got on the bus twice to ask us, the passengers, where we were coming from and where we were going to on the M11. Like, you know, so, but then Phil Hogan can drive all over Kildare and up to Clifton and on his mobile phone. And he thinks that that's okay. It's not okay anymore.
But then how is this different from cancel culture then?
Because, you mean, like, I don't understand why you think that because, or that people think that because he absolutely broke a number of rules, laws that have been made for us, that is supposed to keep us safe from this virus. But Phil Hogan comes into the country and just zooms all over it. Like, I don't see that as cancelling him at all.
You think this is of another level, basically?
I think it's holding him to account. And I think sometimes the problem in this country is that we haven't held our politicians to account. And I think that we are beginning to do that now because we're saying, hold on a moment, I can't do it, why can you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's certainly what a lot of our callers were asking since last Friday.
And you know one thing as well, Katie, I wouldn't be one bit worried about Phil Hogan. He'll lie low for a while. I heard him saying last night on the news or whatever that this could be the end of his political career. Don't worry about him. He has three pensions. And also, he's a young enough man still, only in his 50s or whatever. He is going to lie low for a little while now, and he's going to get some big, massive job somewhere down the line after about a year. And I heard an epidemiologist saying about maybe a couple of weeks ago, I heard him saying that when, like, it was after Kaleri resigned, at least he had the decency to do that quickly, he said that they should never be allowed, they should be made leave. They should just be made leave their positions and not slither back in again on their big pensions. And I agree with that as well. But I'm telling you, we'll see Phil Hogan again. You needn't worry.
Right, Alwyn. We look forward to that.
Thanks, Katie.
Okay, I'm going to have to take my last break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
The preparation for the reopening. The amount of work, the clearing of classrooms, the creating of space, the installing of sanitizers, the informing of teachers, parents, everybody. It is so fantastic that if it doesn't work out, it won't be their fault. But not a word about politics, not a word about governments, not a word about the HSE, not a word about anything. Here were a group of people getting on with it, doing a brilliant job, and I know it's happening all over the country. And if it doesn't work out, it won't be the schools or the teachers' fault, or the management.
I have to leave it there. They're the best of us. That is Father Iggy O'Donovan. I want to thank all my callers today. Today's team, the programme was produced by Dave Sharry. Mark McGraw was on sound. Richie Byrne researched. Have a great weekend and stay tuned for Ray Darcy.